Kvaratskhelia. Oh, it's brilliant. Oh, my word, that is a sensational free kick.
Hello and welcome back to Say A Spotlight. We're your host Jake
and Matt.
And this is episode 127, when we'll be taking you guys to the major talking points as we near the end of the season.
Yes, once again, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently. Don't think you guys want to hear all about match day 37 when there's so much going on as the season is coming to an end. Before we do that, obviously, here is our goal of the week. As you guys heard from the intro, we had a lot to choose from this week, but we did end up going with Kvaratskhelia's free kick.
Absolutely. It was difficult not to go for Lookman's goal in the Europa League final, but we keep it strictly Serie A in the goal of the week sector. So yes, it was Kvaratskhelia. Honorable mentions to Biragi for his free kick as well, both in the same game. He just outdid him. He one-upped him.
Exactly.
Fantastic free kick by Kvaratskhelia there. And of course, Ricardo Rodriguez, who scored his first goal ever for Torino. And of course, it had to come against his former side, Milan. And he celebrated like a rabid madman.
Yeah, I think he loves Milan and he respects Milan. But his first goal for Torino, the way in which he scored it as well, and denying Napoli the chance to overtake them as well. No, you have to celebrate that.
He was heavily criticized during his time at Milan as well. So probably there was a little bit of that in his celebration.
And it doesn't help that his successor was Theo Hernandez, right? Because he was the left back before Theo Hernandez.
Exactly. Milan. And then when Theo joined, all the Milanisti were like, oh, this is what it's like to have a mobile left
exactly.
back. Yeah.
You guys are probably noticing that we are dripped out, myself in a nice Roma kit and Jake in a Bandito Curva Sud t-shirt, which we can't wait to wear at the San Siro. And that is because our homies at Kit Fusion Malta have sorted us out with a very, very kind gift from them. They came and delivered it to us. They were so sweet. This is a company that custom makes any football gear that you're after. Even if it's a kit, they make super, super identical replicas. As you're seeing, I'm wearing a Roma kit. The cheeky bastards attached an Adidas tag to it, so I genuinely thought that it was authentic. It's so realistic, and this Bandito t-shirt, man, is
amazing. It's lovely, and it fits really well as well. Good quality too. So if you are local, if you're based in Malta, and I'm not sure if they ship overseas, but I'm sure you could contact them and ask them. It's kidfusion.mt on Instagram.
Yes.
And they are pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah. Shout out Beppe. Thank you very much, brother. We can't wait to work more together. I'm sure we're going to be asking him for Serie A Spotlight t-shirts.
Absolutely. At some point. For sure. If you're listening and want to send something along, if this has inspired you, go ahead. We love free things.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Exactly. Okay, and so Manscaped, we are still waiting for that kit.
Like, you don't just reach out to us. We plan everything. We fill in all the paperwork and you just ghost us. Come on.
Come on. I haven't shaved my balls since.
I've been waiting. This guy is growing it out. Yeah. Shout out to our boys, the patrons, Alan, Andrew, Andy, Anthony, Tim, Campbell, Sluge, McNoodle, Lena, David, Kyle, Luca, Matthias, Mint, Michael, Tonna, and Ed for your contribution to the show. You guys are what keeps the show going. Thank you very much. If you are interested in becoming a spothead, guys, you just need to pay $3.99 a month, and that is on Patreon. The link is in our bio on all social media platforms, and you would be doing us a massive solid and supporting the podcast.
Absolutely, man. We have big dreams for this podcast, so your contribution would be highly appreciated. If you don't want to invest $3.99 per month on our podcast, that's fine. However, do drop us a follow, drop us a rating.
Like our videos,
subscribe,
comment
to us on YouTube.
You know what to do.
Yeah.
Show us some love, guys. Show us some love, because we definitely need some. So, let's get into this, bro. So, Atalanta bounced back after losing 1-0 to Juve in the Coppa Italia final and won the Europa League after trashing Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen 3-0 thanks to an Ademola Lookman hat-trick, ending their winning streak and tarnishing their chance for a treble. This is a rundown of basically everything we're going to be talking about in this episode. Right after winning the Coppa, Juventus did sack Max Allegri for his behavior and have now hired Motta on a 3-year deal. Montero is the guy who was seen on the bench, who was seen rather against Bologna on the bench. He used to play with them. He's Uruguayan, and this is his first ever coaching gig at senior level.
Yeah.
Inter lifted the title despite failing to beat Lazio. So the celebrations did commence over there, and we got a very funny image of Marcus Thuram jumping to Kinon Salta, Juventino AA. And then his dad, of course, who is known to be a Juve legend, just walks up to him and just smacks him on the back of the head.
That's the first time you'd ever hear us say his father, Lillian.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a very common sentence to hear.
Hey, his father, Lillian. Suning have lost ownership of Inter after failing to pay back Oaktree the 395 million that they owed them. It's the sum of a loan that they took a few years ago, including about 12% interest. There was a whole disaster over there, basically, with Zhang stretching it till the very end to settle his debts, and he didn't manage. So Oaktree are going to try to settle this mess and repay everything so they can participate in the transfer market in 3 weeks' time.
Correct.
Till then, they're going to see what they're going to do about the board, but apparently Marotta will be given some more power. We'll be talking about this later on in the episode. Sassuolo are now officially relegated despite Inter giving them 6 points, whilst Hellas Verona and Cagliari survive. Hey, Cagliari, dude, the bean.
The fucking bean. And let me tell you what, we've lost a lot.
We went to Sardinia. The mood was low. Everyone was talking about that Frosinone win back then. All the Cagliari fans, the Empoli win as well. All the Cagliari fans were disheartened, and here they are surviving another Ranieri masterclass to add to his very long CV, which we will be going through. Relegation is now between Udinese and Frosinone, who face off on the final match day, and Empoli, who play Roma. There is still potential for a relegation playout over there. Roma can still get Champions League as long as Atalanta finish in fifth, which is unlikely as they have a game in hand. But should this be the case, Fiorentina win the Conference League while finishing in ninth, then 10th place will get Conference League. Yes, many ifs, many buts, but it's a possibility to have half of the league in Europe next season.
They're currently in the right spots, Atalanta and Fiorentina. They're close enough to those positions, and Fiorentina close enough to winning their Conference League as well for it to happen. So let's believe, let's dream, whatever.
Absolutely. Things are heating up in the Serie B playoffs as the second legs of the semifinals will take place on the 24th and the 25th of this month. Palermo lost out at home to Venezia 1-0. Of course, the second leg needs to be played, while Catanzaro and Cremonese played out a dramatic 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
There was also a playout between Bari and Ternana, which ended 1-1, and the second leg will take place later on this month.
Keep in mind, guys, that if they end up level on aggregate or they end up drawing both games, it is not away goals, it doesn't go to extra time, doesn't go to penalties, but what happens is that the team that is placed higher than the other team are the ones that go through, which I think is only fair, considering that the league is to be prioritized.
No? Yeah, fair enough, brother, fair enough. It gives them an opportunity, but it doesn't give them too much. Exactly. You know, at the end of the day, your standings say a lot about you. That's over 38 games, right? Playing everyone twice. Ranieri has retired. I thought I mentioned that.
No.
He has retired. Yes, he's a footballing legend, of course, winning the league with Leicester. That was his fairy tale. But his most recent fairy tale, of course, coming with Cagliari to keep them afloat.
Yeah.
Before we get through the details over here, brother, I think a quick rundown of match day 37 is necessary.
Yeah, let's refresh your memories a little bit, right? So firstly, match day 38 is starting right now.
Yes, Fiorentina. On a Thursday,
just
to make sure we miss something, you know. Like
always, man.
This week, every day there was something.
It's so fucking frustrating. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we couldn't find the perfect time to record. You'll notice this episode is late, coming out on Thursday night. We wanted to record on Monday, but of course there was
on Tuesday we were initially going to record, and there was Catanzaro.
Yes, and then Wednesday Coppa. Wednesday Europa League.
Yeah, sorry, Wednesday Europa League, and now today, obviously, we're missing Cagliari Fiorentina. But whatever, hopefully, will be done in time for Love Island Malta. So there was Lecce nil, Atalanta 2, where Atalanta had prematurely confirmed Champions League football, although they didn't have to. Lecce still playing with a hangover, but let me tell you what, they weren't dreadful in this game.
Yeah, Piccoli, they put up a fight.
Yeah, Piccoli had a few chances to get
absolutely.
Some goals
and
over there.
Falcone kept them in at seven saves.
Seven saves, despite him making a mistake in the second goal where he went out to collect that corner kick. I believe he completely missed it, and it was a tap-in. Yeah. My favorite game this week, I think everyone's favorite game this week, was Bologna 3, Juve 3. Bologna were 3-0 up by the 52nd minute with a Calafiori doppietta, who is heavily linked to Juve, and even more so now that Motta is signing a contract at Juve. This was also the game in which Motta had his final game against Juve before signing for them. A very symbolic game. And then, however, Montero's Juventus from the 75th minute onwards, Chiesa got one, and at the end, Arkadiusz Milik even got one.
Fagioli looked good, that coming back.
Fagioli looked decent.
And he's been called up by Spalletti now.
He has, for the Euros.
Yes. He's one of the most creative midfielders Italy have, though. So I understand his sentiment completely. Mm. Plus, there isn't a lot of tape for people to look through right now, considering he's been playing behind closed doors.
You posted a fucking hilarious one because he got a yellow card
in the 90th minute. The suspicious dog meme.
Yeah. Everyone was commenting, bro, it was a tactical foul. Take a joke, dog.
Paolo Montero, by the way, for Juventus, had 186 appearances. So he's quite a Juve legend. And he played at Atalanta before that as well. He got one goal for Juve.
Decorated, Kerry.
Decorated 61 caps for Uruguay with 5 goals, and has previously coached the Juventus under-19s before getting the interim job as the manager, until Motta comes in, of course.
Yeah.
There is, by the way, going to be a last hurrah from Bologna to try to convince Motta, but all the reports are saying Motta has made up his mind. But Bologna will sit with him to try to convince him. So we'll see how that plays out. I can't see him staying, though.
If he does stay, then it's to spite Fabrizio Romano, I'm
exactly,
sure.
Yes.
Roma 1, Genoa 0. This was the game that confirmed Roma at least Europa League. The slight chance of Champions League of Atalanta finish in fifth place. Roma did go into this match with the knowledge that Champions League is unattainable. However, they have put themselves in a position where sixth is guaranteed now because of their direct encounter with Lazio being favourable.
This benefits Empoli mostly, this result. Do they play Empoli on the last
day,
Roma?
They play Empoli. So
they're going to deal with a hungover Roma side, and that's massive for their survival.
The question is, which game on the final match day is going to be the biscotto? Because there's Udinese, Frosinone, and there's Roma against Empoli.
I don't think Udinese and Frosinone will risk it.
I don't think so.
Because anything can happen considering Roma's situation.
Yeah. But if Roma are killing them 3-0, then we might see the greatest biscotto dipped in milk in history.
It was a 79th minute goal from Romelu Lukaku, by the way. Dybala did not start this one. He came on in the 63rd minute and was removed in the 92nd. So his injury record continues, Dybala. And there was, by the way, before we move on, one of the funniest double yellows I've ever seen in football.
Paredes.
He was upset about a call not going their way and he flailed his arms. He got a yellow card. He reacted to the yellow card and got another yellow card to get sent off immediately.
It's that Argentine temper. I don't know any Argentinian people, but I would love to.
I know a few.
You know a few? Of course, bro. You work as a language school teacher.
Of course.
Of course you know Argentine people.
They're lovely.
Inter 1, Lazio 1. No Champions League for Lazio. Even though they got close, they almost beat Inter over here. Inter getting one at the death. Tudor continues to do great work at Lazio. But Inter, you know, they just don't bow. They don't bow out. They had their celebration. They lifted the trophy. Congratulations once again to Inter.
What a goal, by the way, from Kamada.
Yeah, brilliant goal.
Tudor's really brought him back to life. And he's staying.
So he probably doesn't need to pay 100 euro to leave.
Yeah.
Kamada, you get to keep the 100 euro and you get to start for Lazio.
I can't believe those reports.
What a day, like, bro.
They must have forgotten a zero or two, right?
For
like,
sure.
100
two
euro,
zeros,
are you
like,
kidding
two
me?
Two zeros at least. Fiorentina 2, Napoli 2. So apart from the great free kicks that were scored in this game, the opening goal by Biraghi and the closing goal by Kvaratskhelia, Fiorentina stopped Napoli from jumping them over here. And then also, Fiorentina have a better goal difference than Lazio. And they have an equal head-to-head where the aggregate is 2-2. So should Fiorentina and Lazio end up equal on points, then Fiorentina can take that spot in the Europa League. Obviously, they can also win the Conference League.
Yeah.
Torino, so many ifs and buts. I'm so sorry if we're getting stuck repeating the same things and confusing you, but that is unfortunately the way it is.
If by the time you're listening, Fiorentina wouldn't have beaten Cagliari, it's hope is not over. They can still qualify, obviously, through beating Olympiacos.
Exactly. Torino 3, Milan 1. So Torino jumped Napoli and put pressure on Fiorentina over here. Bro, in this game, I have to say, I'm a very harsh critic of Milan by being a fan of Milan, a loyal fan of Milan. But in this game, I thought Torino were just amazing. I don't think I've ever seen Torino play football that well in my life, bro. They looked so, so, so good and so driven. Like.
And defensively, Milan were a mess.
Horrific defense.
Took advantage of that greatly. Mm-hmm. The other way, they were whipping balls, and that cross in the second goal was amazing.
It was insane. But, bro, I've heard people say that Tomori was at fault for both goals. Mm. I can't help but disagree. I say at least one of them was Chow's fault.
And no man's
at
land.
Least one of them was Chow's fault. Because he was caught between two minds and thus completely out of position.
Exactly. When you have a recovery center back like Tomori, who is good in the air, but is not very good defending in the air, it's very important for his center back partner in Chow, for example, to be a physical,
present in the air,
present animal to make up for what he lacks in aerial prowess.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the case in this game at all. I don't know if it was a tactical issue. I don't know if it was a positional issue. Mm-hmm. But whatever it was, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And Chow Tomori on paper is a fantastic partnership. And we've seen it. We've seen this partnership thrive as well.
Yeah.
But this game, of course, when you look at Duvan Zapata and he's being marked by Tomori when Chow was in no man's land covering the pass, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't think Tomori is going to reach his full potential if he doesn't have someone by his side that he can learn from. Because if you look at Tomori's shortcomings, they're the same shortcomings that he had at Chelsea. They're the same shortcomings that don't get him into the Euro team. It is his lack of discipline at times. We've seen him get early red cards, so on and so forth. His defensive positioning, thank God he has the recovery that he has, and his aerial defending. Those are the three areas where he could learn. Imagine, you remember when Milan were linked with Acerbi last summer and nobody wanted him. Could have learned so much from Acerbi.
He could have. He would have complimented him.
Yeah.
That's it. Tomori's biggest issue, in my opinion, I do agree with what you said, but it's the fact that he gets this rush of blood to the head.
Mm.
He sees red almost and he just rushes out of possession and tries to like press the striker who'd be holding up the play. I think he would be fantastic for a team that plays very positive football, Tomori, kind of like a Bayern Munich, you know? Mm. Imagine a Bayern Munich that play with a high line, or a Manchester City.
Yeah,
you put Tomori at the back, or Leverkusen, as long as they're not playing Atalanta, baby. I think, yes, that's where he would thrive, to be honest with you.
I agree. Sassuolo 0, Cagliari 2. Faith has been restored in the universe as Sassuolo are relegated and Cagliari survive. And also, bro, I just have to say, this is the only point I want to make from this game, is Kumbulla is actual horse shit.
Kumbulla, my lord.
Did he... Oh my God. He looked awful.
And he has looked off. He's low-key looked bought.
Literally, bro. Literally.
The own goal was mental. And this game as well, he didn't do himself any favors as well.
Man's got a burner phone for sure.
Yeah. Between him, Ruan Tresoldi, and the aging Gianmarco Ferrari.
No.
They were destined to go down. When you look at your center backs and you think Martin Ehrlich is the best one, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Lapadula scored a penalty to ensure this. It did not stop Yerimina from fighting him to take it. He should know better in a situation like this. Let the the coldest striker in Serie B last season, take it, no problem. Lapadula's got ice in his veins. Yeah. Mina is a fantastic penalty taker, and his penalties that he's taken recently were all better than Lapadula's penalty this game. But whoever is chosen to take it, you don't question. No, especially in a game like this.
Don't fuck with him. Exactly. He's about to take a penalty. It means don't be tugging at his shirt saying, come on, bro, come on, bro. Like, don't. Just let him take it. Let him have a clean mind. That's my least favorite thing. It's so childlike when people fucking fight over a penalty.
Absolutely. Prati scored the first goal in this one. Mm-hmm. His cousin was in my class.
Really?
Yes.
Prati's cousin was in your
cousin
class.
Was in my class. Wow. He didn't stop like mentioning it. My cousin Prati plays in Serie A. He's like, my cousin plays in Serie A. I'm like, with who?
With who? Yeah, really, with who?
He's like, Cagliari. He's like, Prati. I'm like, ah, Prati, defensive midfielder, 20 years old. He's like, how the fuck do you know?
I'm like, 5'9".
I like the league, what can I say? Matheus Henrique got sent off this game, and on his way out, he punched the VAR monitor.
Ah, yes, bro, yes, man. My God. Henrique.
Yeah, fucking, what's his name, could be seen, what's his name? Pinamonti at the end of the game crying as well, even though he's been a bit of a disaster this season. Mm. We'll see what happens with Pinamonti. I saw he was linked to Milan, man.
I mean, he's owned by Atalanta.
Is he still owned by Atalanta?
He is owned by Atalanta. What? So he's safe.
I thought
in that
they bought
regard.
Him from Empoli, Sassuolo. They had bought him from Empoli, brother, I'm pretty sure.
Let me just double check, but I'm quite sure I heard the commentator say.
Yeah, he might have been wrong. Because if I remember correctly, he was owned by Empoli. And then loaned out to Sassuolo, perhaps. No, and then bought, sorry, and then bought by Sassuolo.
Let me check transfer market. Here it says he's owned by Atalanta.
Hmm. Let's take a look. Dede.
Yeah, he's owned by Atalanta.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, end of loan to Empoli.
We'll see. We'll confirm that one for later.
Upcoming transfer. Let's check back to Atalanta. Man, I hate the format
of transfer market. Yeah, same here. Takes me a while every time.
Well, his Wikipedia says he's still with Lecce, right? So I'm not going to rely on Wikipedia to give you guys information. But I do believe that his parent club are Atalanta.
Okay.
Monza 0, Frosinone 1. Frosinone keep it in their hands until the last match day, where they have a pivotal game against Udinese. Walid Khedira, well done to you, brother, because in the second half of the season, he has been brilliant, and for the first time ever, I have seen him perform well, consistently in front of my very eyes, because before that, I'm like, what does anyone who's at Bari, I believe?
He was at Bari.
He was at Bari, and then he went to Morocco with the World Cup. Yeah. I was like, I don't see what the hype is, but he's really showing what a well-rounded striker he is. Good size, good pace, decent finishing.
Opportunistic. He's a good poacher, exactly. Khedira.
Ah, another great game last weekend. Udinese 1, Empoli 1. It was 0-0 until Niang scored a penalty in the 90th minute. And then Samardzic scored a penalty in the 104th minute.
The drama. Dude.
There were like 6 minutes of added time or 5 minutes of added time. And fucking before the final whistle, there was a penalty awarded to Udinese. It took VAR like four or five minutes to confirm it. There was complaining. There was this and that. And then Samardzic stepped up and slotted it in. No problem whatsoever.
And Empoli thought they had taken the lead actually in the 35th minute with Male scoring. And everyone celebrated like crazy. But it was actually Vardov for offside.
Yeah, it was a weird goal. It went like through the keeper. It was strange. What was I going to say? And of course, if Empoli had won that, bro, they then would have just left it between Udinese and Frosinone to battle it out, and one of them would get relegated. Would have given them Empoli 3 points, and they would have jumped them both.
Yeah.
So, the little setback for them, to say the least. And Salernitana 1, Hellas 2, for Hellas to confirm survival.
Absolutely, yes. Baroni, amazing. Noslin continuing to impress and to show us new elements to his game.
Mm-hmm.
Salernitana fans on the day were amazing. They showed up. They sang despite losing, despite not only getting one goal, and was a consolation goal. And at the end of the game, you can see the Salernitana players walking up to the fans and basically doing the whole walk of shame and the whole embarrassment thing where the fans just boo them and they stand there and they watch them. And the only one who walked up to the Salernitana fans was Candreva. Mm. And they berated him. And he's potentially the best player in their history.
Yeah, I mean,
well, they have had Gattuso, Salernitana. Salernitana had Gattuso before Milan.
Really?
Of course, yeah. So I guess he's probably the best
player. Wonder he's got such big balls, Gattuso.
Absolutely,
yes. I love how, by the way, you said Candreva walked up to them. You did the walking with your fingers.
You can tell I'm working with an elementary group at the moment. I'm becoming like a mime, you know, gesturing everything.
Yeah, again, it's a shame to see Salernitana go. I wonder how they'll fare in Serie B next year. Because they, of course, they were in Serie A. They have that experience in Serie A, 3 seasons in a row. Got a decent set of players that I think can compete in Serie B. But it mustn't be good for the mind losing all of those games and being the shittiest team in Serie A for the past fucking 10 years. Like, without a doubt kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. They were, their confidence is going to be at an all-time low. But next season, they're going to be... They're going to have new players. They're going to be in a new league with a new manager, perhaps, if they decide to change their manager.
Mm-hmm.
At least they get a fresh start, a complete fresh start.
They
from
can
the very
pull a
beginning.
Sump. They can be battling relegation for all of the season. And then the final 10 matches.
Win a few and make the playoffs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But shall we speak about the Europa League final a little bit,
yes,
brother?
Bro.
I've been waiting for this
the
moment.
The first thing I'm going to mention is two completely different Atalanta sides in the Coppa Italia final and in the Europa League final.
100%.
You would tell me what happened in the Coppa Italia final. Was it really that tight at the back for them that they couldn't score a single goal after Juve getting the lead in the 3rd minute through Vlahovic? I know it sounds simple, but Scamacca being absent for that game was detrimental for Atalanta and their entire playstyle. And it allowed Juve and Allegri to do what they do best. They scored early. Atalanta didn't do themselves any favors allowing an early goal against Juve. Mm-hmm. You must avoid at all costs.
At all costs.
Playing against Juve in a knockout competition. Do not playing against Allegri in a knockout competition. Do not concede early. Whatever you do. The fact that they didn't have a target man meant that Juve had every right or every excuse to force Atalanta to play out wide without worrying about anything, basically.
Yeah.
Every cross that went in, Bremer was in control of 100%.
All over it
he was. They didn't stand a chance, Atalanta. Mm-hmm. And Juventus, the way they defended as a team, their low block, forcing Atalanta wide constantly, I thought it was a masterclass from Allegri. Mm-hmm. Allegri literally gave us the most Allegri last hurrah I've ever seen in my life. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, it was an early goal, 3rd minute. Defend for the rest of the game. Get sent off. Rage and strip.
Literally.
We saw it all.
Literally.
He broke camera equipment. He insulted people.
And celebrated a trophy as
and
well.
And that, then that lifted the trophy, yes.
Vintage Allegri, if you think about the legendary Allegri at Juve. So had that happened, what did you see that was different about Atalanta in the Europa League final?
So they had more avenues for attack with the fact that they had a number 9 and the fact that they had Scamacca starting meant that Leverkusen would focus marking him, which freed up other players like De Ketelaere and, more importantly, of course, in this game, Lookman, who had a field day over there. Atalanta's press was claustrophobic, bro.
Yeah.
Claustrophobic it was. I was feeling watching it, you know,
I
was rooting for Atalanta and I was feeling bad for Leverkusen. It looked like every single player had 3 men on him at all times.
I always say that Atalanta are more entertaining. They're so entertaining to watch when they're on the ball, but they're so much more entertaining to watch when they're off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they shift around and change shape is in unison is a masterpiece. You forget to look at the ball when Atalanta are off the ball.
That's
You're just
true.
Looking at the way that they're adapting. What they did over here is, what is Leverkusen's strength? It is building play up from the back, turning defense into attack in a split second. They have that thing where the keeper plays the ball to a defender and then from then on it's this vertical fucking tiki-taka that they play all the way up. Atalanta, man for man, marked every single player high up the pitch. They had their two central midfielders in Ederson. Was it Ederson and Pasalic?
Yes, yes. Later on.
Uh-huh. They were up all the way pressing the defenders and the midfielders. The press was so high. And let me tell you what, Leverkusen, as much as I haven't gotten to watch them so much, that makes me fully appreciate the way they play football, which is apparently ridiculous and revolutionary. I've watched them against Roma and I've watched them against Atalanta. And one thing that they really struggled with in both these games was they didn't seem to be very press resistant as a team. Now, I don't know if these are off days. I don't know if the Italian style of press is what put them off. But I really do think that Atalanta got it down to a T with the high press in the first half. And then the second half, just taking their foot off the gas a little bit and holding fort a little bit more.
But still pressing, regardless, always. Mm-hmm. The entire game they pressed, which was super impressive because... And super impressive, of course, for in general, but it's not surprising for us because we've seen Atalanta do this for a long time. And that's why I'm so happy that Atalanta actually got a European trophy. Because that means that Gasperini's work over here does officially go down in history.
Yeah.
You know, it would have gone down in history. We're always going to tell our kids, oh my God, man, you should have seen them. Papu Gomez, Josep Pilicic, Duvan Zapata. You should have seen them. Should have been there. Vibes. Like, that will go down in history. But this officially will be there forever. And then every Europa League, you know, when you're waiting for the match, there'll be replays of this Gasperini lifting the trophy. And what he's done here is absolutely incredible, you know. Yeah. It was Ederson and Koop Miners from the
Ederson
start. Pasalic did come
on.
Koop Miners, dude, his tactical foul game. He played deeper this game.
Yeah.
He was deeper, like kind of pulling the strings.
It was the tempo guy. Yes. And then Ederson was more of that fucking box-to-box balls and breaking down play and carrying the ball forward.
Those two are just geniuses, man. Mm-hmm. And the way Koop Miners just kept stopping, interrupting their attacks without getting booked. And then eventually, later on, I think when they were 2-0 up, just stopping an attack by just literally pulling his shirt and then getting the yellow. The commentator was laughing. He was like, that's like the sixth time he's broken down the attack for them. Such a brilliant,
honestly,
all-rounded player.
Honestly, and the thing is, how many times have we seen him? There he is. How many times have we seen him play in a number 10 and we go, this is his best position? Uh-huh. Then we see him play in the number 8 and go, wow, I love how much more freedom he had over here. He's great over there. I love how he can both attack and defend in that position. And they see him as a number 6 and you go, fuck me, but him dictating the tempo and breaking down attacks has to be his best position. He's so versatile. He's so smart. Alan, one of our patrons, said that there was a commentator, like a Norwegian commentator, I believe, that said, wow, I wasn't sure that Koop Miners had the technical ability to perform at this level, but I'm pleasantly surprised. That shows the biggest lack of ball knowledge I've ever heard from a commentator. Like,
That's shocking, to be honest with you.
But what a performance all around by Atalanta. Honestly, they got it nailed down. Leverkusen, keep in mind, are a team that are unbeaten all season. They were on course for an undefeated treble.
Before they met Gasperini, and his
before
men.
They met Gasperini.
And Gym City's cold and empty. And Hien, bro. Hien was a wall again. It's everyone, man. Even Zappa Costa and Ruggeri put in a shift. It was just all round fantastic. Fantastic display.
And let's address, obviously, Ademola Lookman.
Yes.
Because we've said it once and we'll say it again. This guy is... he's the star of this team. From an offensive perspective, now, okay, Koop Miners is their best player, right? Koop Miners is the most complete player, but Lookman is the star. And I've said this before, you'd always bank on Lookman being involved in a goal. He is the most reliable offensive outlet that they've had. Scamacca can be streaky, De Ketelaere can be streaky, but over the past two seasons, Lookman has been that common factor, that reliable guy, whether you want him at winger, whether you want him at striker, behind the striker, he's over there putting in a shift and he's always involved in the goals. And here he is on the biggest stage of his career and he gets you the first hat-trick ever in a Europa League final. Ademola won a row with a Giza, man.
No, he's amazing, fantastic signing from Atalanta, very smart. one thing we haven't even mentioned yet is that Atalanta are in the green. They're a team without any debt doing this, which is pretty much unheard of.
Yeah.
And yeah, they just keep operating amazingly and bringing in players like Ademola Lookman, who I believe had missed a Panenka with a lowly side. I don't know if it was Fulham or something before coming there. You know, it was in a pretty meh spot before Atalanta just picked him up. And suddenly you see this player just terrorizing everyone. And so that you can say, you know, he's tearing up Serie A only. No, bro, he's tearing up the Invincibles. He scored exactly 3 goals against a team that hasn't lost this season and in a final.
Bro, 2 of the goals. Okay, so first goal that he scored, brilliant work by Zappa Costa. Their defender Palacios, super flat-footed, ball watching.
Yeah, the midfielder.
Lookman slots in and gets the goal over there. Second goal, that dribbling in a tight space, taking it to his favorite right foot and curling it into the bottom corner from the edge of the area. Amazing. The last goal, the way he dribbled and smashed it past the keeper. Honestly, 3 really, really good goals that he scored over there.
Because in the second one, he cut inside on his right and he hammered it in.
Yeah.
In the third one, the defender was like, all right, I'm going to stop him from cutting in. He cut left and smashed it
in.
What can you do against him?
In that scenario.
Yeah. What also, a game by him. He had an I'm him moment.
Exactly. Also, I have to take my hat off for Xabi Alonso. We know what a classy guy he is. We know what a gentleman he is. I followed Xabi Alonso for all of his career. We watched Xabi Alonso for Real Madrid against Milan. And watched Xabi Alonso for Real against Osasuna.
Yeah, live, isn't
it? Yeah. In the Osasuna game, Ronaldo scored a hat-trick. To me, the player I enjoyed watching the most over there was Xabi Alonso. Because he's so Pirlo-esque in that sense, and I will mention them in the same breath because they are very much on par in my eyes as footballers. And now as a manager, he's really showing his knowledge and his adaptability to adapt to the modern game. But classy as ever. Mm-hmm. No sulking, no complaining, no flailing of the arms during the game. Just a true professional, shakes Gasperini's hands at the end of it, congratulates the Atalanta players. A real classy fucking
He took
act.
The Bundesliga trophy into the stands and celebrated it with the fans. What a guy, what a man of the people. Yeah, amazing. Yes. I have a particularly strange memory of Xabi Alonso, and I think we've discussed this. You remember it for sure. Remember when he went from Liverpool to Real Madrid and he like shrunk?
Yes,
you remember
bro.
He was a little bit hefty as a guy at Liverpool and then he joined Real Madrid and he became like, who the fuck that?
You know what, Xabi Alonso? I think it was in hindsight because these are often things we think about as children. But he did look a bit fuller when he was at Liverpool, but also when he went to Real Madrid, he got a beard. And the beard slimmed him. He got that ginger beard.
We were probably
beard,
so young, like, we never made the connection.
Exactly. Xabi Alonso lost
weight.
Looks a bit weird. But Xabi Alonso, bro, he was such a fine footballer, and I'm so happy for him as a manager. He's doing like the opposite of Motta, where Motta is taking that big step. Okay, he had his years at Spezia, he's had almost 2 full seasons at Bologna now, and he feels it's the right time to make the move, sure, whatever. This guy, Xabi Alonso, said, no, I'm staying another season at Leverkusen. We won the league. I want to do it again. I want to be undefeated again at Leverkusen. Yeah. I want to learn more now at Leverkusen. I want to make Leverkusen a titan of a team that's going to fight Bayern Munich once again until the final match day. Amazing. I'm in awe.
It really is, yes. But he can go fuck himself for now because Gasperini is the guy we're focusing on. Gasperini, of course, who is a former player, who had his youth career started with Juventus, funnily enough. He didn't actually feature for Juve, but he was loaned out to Reggiana, where he played 16 games and eventually sold to Palermo, where he had 128 games. Can you imagine Gasperini playing football?
Not at all.
I can't even imagine him young. I imagine he just looked like that for his whole life. he played for Cavese, Pistoiese, Pescara, Salernitana, and Vispezzaro.
Wow, 160 games
for Pescara. Yes, Gasperini, okay, so was a former player as well. This might be new to you. His managerial career started as a youth sector manager for Juventus before moving on to Crotone.
Yeah, number of years at the Juve youth sector.
Absolutely, yes. That's probably where he learned quite a bit, actually.
Mm. 10 seasons.
Yeah, Crotone, then he went between 2003 and 2006. He was at Genoa for 4 years between 2006 and 2010 before he went to Inter, where he flopped a little bit in 2011. Went
to Palermo. Gave him a season.
Yes.
Inter were going through their banter era. Yes, they gave him a season.
It was one of the many flops back then. Yeah. Palermo for 2 seasons, and then Genoa for 3 seasons before moving to Atalanta in 2016, and he's been there since.
Oh my God, wait 1 sec, because I had a big boo-boo. That wasn't Inter's banter era. That was a season after.
2011.
That's a season after they fucking won the... won the treble, bro. No, getting my dates mixed up.
Yeah. Gasperini now has been heavily linked with the Napoli job, despite being at Atalanta since 2016 and totally revolutionizing the club. He's tempted by this Napoli rumor, and when asked about it, he did actually say that he's flattered, and he said it's an odd position to be in. It's like being married with kids, but you meet a very beautiful woman. That's what he said, Gasperini, dude.
Is he married with kids, man? There's a lot of explaining to do over there. He's leaving Atalanta to go to Napoli, and he's cheating on his wife.
It's like being married with kids, but there's a beautiful woman. Like, ah, shit. Now you're going to have to fuck her. What? Go home to your wife and kids, Gasperini.
Bro, I'm still flabbergasted. Inter replaced Mourinho with Gasperini. I had no idea. My brain doesn't go that far back.
Yes, it was quite a flop for over there, to be honest. But yeah, he has picked up. He's quite a late bloomer in his coaching career, Gasperini. Look at that. Look at him with Genoa, how young.
Wow. Yeah. Handsome in his young age, Gasperini. Now he looks like a garden gnome. He does look like a garden gnome.
And this is Serie A spotlight giving Gasperini his flowers.
Absolutely. I think we've covered everything regarding the Europa League.
Should we praise Allegri for his Coppa victory, by the way? Should we go through a little bit of history on Allegri?
I mean, the next point is the Coppa Italia. Italia, Allegri. I think... again, further to your point, we should address Allegri a bit after the tactical final masterclass he gave us. So yes. Go ahead.
So Allegri, standing at 6 feet, by the way, never actually would have guessed that he's 6 feet tall, was a player as well. He played for the likes of Livorno, Pisa, Pescara, Cagliari, Perugia, Padova, Napoli, Pescara. He's played for, I mentioned Pescara, he played for quite a few teams before, of course, retiring with 374 games and 56 goals.
56 goals, huh, Massimiliano?
Yeah, he used to be a midfielder.
Look at that.
Yeah. His managerial career started with Alianese in 2003. Then he had a stint at Spal. He went to Grosseto. He was managing Sassuolo in 2007. Moved to Cagliari in 2008 to 2010. Then Milan in 2010 to 2014, where he started to find great success. And then 2014 all the way to 2019 with a 2-year hiatus. And then 2021 till 2024 with Juventus. So he is affiliated mostly with Juventus. Uh-huh. But his honors are where this gets a little bit crazy, because he's won so much. He's such a highly decorated manager. He's won all the way down from the bottom, you know, from the Coppa Italia in Serie C in 1986. Yes. So we need to go here. So Sassuolo, he actually won Serie C in 2007. With Milan, of course, he won the league in 2010 when Kevin Prince Boateng did the famous moonwalk dance.
2010, 2011.
The Supercoppa as well in 2011. And then he moved to Juventus, where he won the league 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. He won the Coppa Italia another 5 times. Supercoppa Italiana twice. And he finished runner-up in the Champions League twice. So yeah, Allegri has had a very successful career. A controversial manager, of course. Maybe not back in the day, because that style was more common. But nowadays, when you're using this style with a big team and you're not getting the results that ideally you'd get, you're going to face a lot of criticism. And it's easier to target someone who doesn't play positive football.
And it's really interesting to see what he's going to do now. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes a break. Considering since he was sacked by Juve, there is some kind of remuneration that is going to take place. He will be making some money for doing fuck all.
So apparently, the fact that he broke some form of conduct during his protests, Juve might be in their rights to not have to pay him his...
Okay, let's get into why he was sacked. So that's super interesting. Let's get into why he was sacked. Sure. Because it's not just... Okay, so to me, it's performance-based, right? I don't think they were happy with the results this year, and I don't think they were too chuffed by the results last year, but there were so many factors last year to take into consideration with the Plus Valenza and all of the drama going around.
The European exclusion.
Yeah, and the European exclusion. I think they gave him this season to say, look, we're only going to be in the league, so... Max is our guy. Allegri is our guy. He's done it. He has no other competitions. He can go all the way.
Take us to top four and that's exactly. It. Like, yeah.
First half of the season, brilliant second half of the season, shambolic. And I do believe that it was as a result of that that he was going to get sacked anyway. However, at the end of the match, so firstly, he got sent off. He stripped fucking ass naked, threw a tantrum.
He took off quite a lot, huh?
He'd
blazer, tie, unbuttoned his dress shirt.
He unbuttoned his shirt a lot, bro.
A lot. All the way down. I was very surprised. Like, this is a final, sir.
Yeah. And then basically what happened was, so he left the pitch and then Juve won. He ran onto the pitch. He was signaling to Giuntoli, telling him, go away, go away.
Don't celebrate, you don't deserve to celebrate. You're against us, essentially, allegedly. Allegedly.
And then he had, what was the person? He had a tiff with, Tutto Sport.
Tutto Sport, the newspaper, saying you only write what Juventus tell you to write, essentially. Which, again, allegedly, but Tutto Sport does have this Juventus affiliation, so that's not very surprising. You know, it's probably fucking true.
Bro, you know what he told him? So
this is according to who?
This is according to Forbes, right?
According to the journalist himself that got
the article is from Forbes. According to the journalist, the coach told him to write the truth in your newspaper, not just what the club tells you to write. Allegri then threatened Mr. Viciago, going on to say, I know where to wait for you. I'll come and rip off both your ears. I'll come and hit you in the face. Write the truth in your newspaper. He's the best. Rip off both your ears.
Like a rabid gorilla.
Relax! Yeah. What the fuck is going on? Literally, gorilla.
You're winning.
You're fucking winning 1-0. Yeah. Game plan is on point. You're sorted. But I do think that is enough to get you the sack as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if that actually did have something to do with it.
There's the whole stilo Juve, you know, that Juve like to do things elegantly. They don't like to... They don't like to lose face or to come across as disrespectful. In fact, one of the heaviest criticisms of Sarri was that he wasn't stilo Juve. He's a tracksuit manager that smokes cigarettes. You know, exactly. That's not what Juve want.
He chews cigarette filters on the bench
while picking his nose. Mm-hmm. I mean, Allegri has been a massive servant to the club, always defending them in press conferences, never demanding more money and everything. And I think that the way it ended between them was disappointing from Juve's end.
I
get that it's business and you jump on the opportunity. He didn't make it easy, it's true. And they were going to jump at any given opportunity to sack him and try to get out of that 9 million or whatever they have to pay him.
But I think, bro, that Juventus could have sacked Allegri in March. I think they could have. I think that a massive reason as to why they didn't was out of respect to him. For nostalgic reasons, right?
I think it's the...
For nostalgic reasons.
I
believe.
That's a massive reason, I think.
Yes, as well. Where was I going? But I think they kept him on out of nostalgic respect to him. They're going to keep him on until the end of the season, but then he threw this fucking... He pulled off this shit, basically, which... Certain behaviors such as threatening personality. I know where to find you. I'm going to rip your ears off. I'm going to hit you in the face while the crest of the club is on your chest. That requires immediate action, immediate firing. It doesn't matter who you are. The only reason he's not parading and being given his flowers at the end of the season is all his fault. Mm-hmm. Respect to Allegri, because like you said, he's been a very loyal servant to Juve. He's never caused problems. He's never spoken out of line to the media until this very fucking moment, always defending the club. But I think this is what broke it. And it would be great if he could be given his flowers at the end of the season and gets a round of applause from the entire stadium, because that's what he deserves, despite the season. But I think he's shot himself in the foot over here. Juve were left with no option whatsoever.
And it was probably a combination of things. All the criticism he's had to deal with all season, the journalists, you know, imagine every day or every weekend you wake up, you read the newspaper, it's the same thing. Every program, every journalist is ripping on you. And you remain calm, you know, you almost tease them and play with them, you know, playing this whole top four thing. But I do think that this moment, it was a final, you know, he had a chance to prove everyone wrong. He must have been so fueled with adrenaline at the time, and like everything just came rushing back. And I do think that that was a burst of emotion and of stress that he's had to deal with all season.
I think so. He's only human after all, right?
Yes, yes.
Question, because I find this to be an interesting debate. I think the answer is quite straightforward, but it is an interesting one. Who's had the better season, Milan or Juve?
Well, the fact that fifth spot gets Champions League can help you lean towards Juve a little bit more because they have a trophy. But the fact that Milan qualified for Champions League next season, had the group of death and didn't do terribly in it, and then got quite far in the Europa as well, it's not the worst season ever. The fact that Milan lost so aggressively to Inter again isn't great. I mean, Juve got a trophy, man. Juve got a trophy and Champions League qualification. They had a better season.
That's it. And it's ridiculous because Milan's second half of the season, except for the last month, was amazing. There was that stretch of victories where everyone was like Pioli in all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Whereas Juve have had the second worst second half of the season in their history. Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're going to make me break.
Why are you exposing me?
Because you're going to make me break. Zooming in on that weird photo.
We can turn it. We've got a camera.
Look at that. This is what the guy is zooming in on.
This is his Wikipedia photo.
While I'm trying to say something. But I think it boils down to who has the silverware, right? At the end of the day. And Juve got the Coppa Italia, man. Yeah. And Milan got knocked out against Atalanta.
Vlahovic spanned celebrations again and then it got called off.
Vera?
Yes, bro.
I didn't see him spam the celebration.
He did the whole, like I've got massive balls celebration.
Yes.
And then Andrew Batman was like, what a twat. Having big balls is something that people should say about you. Exactly. Not you say about yourself.
I have huge balls, man. Vlahovic is the CEO of that. He's his own favorite character. I think he's an
action. And then Alan was like, it just dawned on me that that Vlahovic is a Fortnite kid.
100% he's a Fortnite kid, man. 100%. Okay, so that's Allegri. So, sacked. Yes. Montero until the end of the season. Great comeback by Montero.
You saw him celebrating. Yes, he was losing his mind.
Man, no shit. He has two games in charge. He does that in one of them.
Losing
3-0. By the way, I think every single player on the pitch for Juve was like, Jesus Christ, you don't know what you have until it's gone when they're down 3-0 in the first 52 minutes against Bologna. But they got back under Montero. But now, next season, 99.9% Thiago Motta.
For 5 million a season.
For 5 million a season, net. Great salary, bro.
Very high.
3 years. 3 years in charge for the team. What do you expect to see out of Juve under Motta?
I expect balance. I expect high, intelligent plays and offensive, interesting and intricate offensive patterns. That's the thing about about Motta's system that's often overlooked. The fact that it's not an offensive system. It's purely balanced. It's very similar to Gilardino, what he does at Genoa.
I agree.
So they're not going to come out guns blazing and change their style entirely. I think it's going to be a solid team with solid foundations and a few tricks up their sleeve getting forward.
Yeah.
I think that it can go terribly wrong. There is potential for it to go terribly wrong.
He needs to change around a lot for it to fit.
Yes, he was at Bologna where, okay, there was pressure towards the end when you're in that position, you need to maintain it, but you're in that position and everyone's happy that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Juve, next season maybe not, but the season after, they're going to start wondering when are we going to fight for the league.
Yeah.
There's that. The expectation is different.
Mm-hmm.
You're at a club now that wants to win trophies.
Yeah.
So, he's definitely got a lot to prove over there, and he's definitely taken on a job that's going to be quite stressful for him, I think.
I think he's in the right place if he wants the backing of the club.
Of the board.
I think Giuntoli
is
an admirer of Motta, and I think if Motta tells him, look, give me Calafiori, bring in Cope Miners, and bring in someone else, and he'll be willing to invest that money to trust in Motta. And those are the two names that are being mentioned. Well, I believe there's a third one as well.
Calafiori bloody scored two against Juve, dude, in that game, man, as well. He's so good.
He's amazing.
He's 22 years old, Calafiori, man, at the back.
Bremer, imagine Calafiori Bremer.
I think they might sell Bremer. Because Motta's entire philosophy and approach to football
playing
is building up from the back.
Uh-huh. And Bremer isn't good with the ball at his feet.
He's not great at it, despite his Brazilian heritage. So they could get a good payday from Bremer. Mm. He's a bloody good defender.
What about Vlahovic up top? You think he's someone that can play as their Xavi role?
I think he can totally be utilized by Motta. I think we're seeing a 20-goal-a-season striker over there with Motta. I mean, he showed, man, what he can do. He always shows what he can do. He has dips, it's true, but Juve, it's a hard place to judge players at the moment considering what they've been through and considering, you know, their style and everything, how it's been. So I do think it would be foolish to get rid of Chiesa or Vlahovic when you have Motta coming in.
I agree.
What he did with Salamakers and Doi and Zirgzi. Imagine what he can do with Yildiz, Chiesa and Vlahovic.
It's true.
Imagine that.
It's true. And I think even the players that were mentioned, Calafiori and Cope Miners, you can so imagine them. You could so imagine Cope Miners being utilized in a Freuler
really
role.
Cope Miners doesn't go to Juve, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I want to see good football. Okay, and if Cope Miners is playing under Motta, I will be able to see an element of beauty in that. Keep him at Atalanta would be my favorite choice. But at Juve under Motta, I see the appeal in that 100% with Calafiori behind him, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, I'm oddly excited.
For Juve?
For Juve. I dislike Juve. Honestly, I don't like Juve. But I really like Motta, man. I really like the way he plays football, and they signed Calafiori, such a good player. And there are other players that I really admire at Juve. Juve have a nice squad. Yildiz, for example, bro. Yildiz is a player I think is gonna go to the very, very, very fucking top as a player. He'll be one of the world's best.
Yildiz is already a key player of the international team of Turkey.
Exactly.
I can't wait for Euros to see him.
There's Chiesa, who I'm a massive admirer of as well. There are so many players that I just have respect for in that team. So I think I'm going to enjoy watching them under Motta.
So this is interesting. I think we might as well go to this, to be honest with you, bro. There are five managers who are said to be, or who are assumed to be, remaining at their clubs. Now, coming into the season, the top seven had hardly changed their managers, right?
Remember they hadn't. That?
They hadn't changed all top seven. This season, we're going to see a lot of reshuffling. We're gonna be very busy in the summer, you and I, with our episodes. We get outdated immediately. Inzaghi will be staying at Inter. De Rossi will most likely be staying at Roma. Tudor, I think, will stay at Lazio. I think. Gilardino has just signed an extension with Genoa. That doesn't mean anything, but let's assume he stays. Baroni will stay at Hellas Verona unless he's poached. And Gotti, I think, yes, will stay at Lecce. Everyone else will probably change manager. Isn't that mental?
Gasperini, I think will stay at Atalanta.
No, Gasperini is being rumored to go to Napoli. And
it's a rumor, though.
No, but he said himself he's tempted by it. And usually when something like this happens, when you win a major trophy, many people look to the next step, man. Many people think to themselves, like, you know, I've done all I can. I took this lowly Atalanta side and I got so close. I took them to so many bloody finals.
It could happen.
Finally,
it
I've
could
won
happen.
A
it's
European
just not a
trophy.
Guarantee,
like,
right?
Like, what's next for Atalanta? You know, I mean, he can go elsewhere, you know, at the end of the day
could,
and get a new
could.
Experience. I mean, he's not getting any younger.
That's it.
You know, how many years has he got left?
No,
as a manager.
I think we'll see a lot of changes. I think Italiano is... I think we'll end up seeing him at Bologna. I think he'll take on that Champions League role.
I can see that.
I think he has a lot of faith in a squad like that. Although Motta probably made those 11 players look way better than they were, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think Bologna... I still am of the opinion that Italiano going from Fiorentina to Bologna is a lateral as fuck move.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. But for one season, at least, it won't be. It'll be an upgrade by a lot.
He is on such good trajectory, Italiano. Last season, 2 finals. Coppa and Conference League.
Uh-huh.
He has another shot at the Conference League this year. International headlines, he's writing them, right? He's there. He's on all of them. Decent in the league, 8th place, 7th place, you know what I mean? And I think he could take a big step up. I see Italiano at Napoli, for example.
Italiano was one of the men considered by
Bolden plays
Napoli.
A 4-3-3
there
or
we
a
go.
4-2-3-1. It's perfect.
But I do think that this is a good opportunity for him. Bologna have a fantastic sporting director and a very good project going on and a young team as well. Italiano's style it complements that Bologna team, I think. And he does have knockout experience. So granted, it's going to be in the Champions League now and we'll see what backing he'll get. He has a few players now, as you mentioned, that Motta had them playing fantastically. So if you had to sell Calafiori, if you had to sell Zirkzee, you're going to get a good payday.
You're going to make a
shit ton of money.
But you're going to lose two pivotal players
for Motta. So suddenly now you have Italiano with this new budget and a very capable sporting director. They can work together and maybe pull some strings, dude. And the knockout football, Italiano has proved to be competent. So maybe, who knows, man.
Good, maybe you're going to leave it up to Italiano to sign a striker for them. His track record signing strikers ain't fucking great, huh?
Yeah, to be honest, Fiorentina and the Mercato aren't great.
I was hoping to see Gilardino move away. I love Genoa and I love Gilardino's Genoa specifically. But I was hoping that like he'd go to Fiorentina. That is the ideal for him. He's played with Fiorentina. He's also played with Milan. Maybe he can start working in that.
I think that for Gilardino, let's see what he can do when you start, you know, when you sell the likes of Albert Goodmanson, you know.
He has a year case study, man, now. He has a year case study in Serie A, so it's wise of him to stay there.
I think so. I think it's a place where he's loved. It's a place where he's respected. He's 11th at the moment as it stands in the league. Let's hope he stays for another season and continues to prove himself.
Question.
Please.
A lot of managers available in the market right now, not only in Italy, but worldwide especially, right? So there's De Zerbi, who's leaving Brighton. Klopp, who's leaving Liverpool, but he's already made it clear he might even be retired, kind of thing.
Conceição, Conte,
Tuchel, Pochettino, I've mentioned him. But there are all of these high caliber, recognized managers. Fonseca to Milan. Fonseca will go to Milan.
That's a lateral move.
Do you think any of them at all? Do you think there's a possibility of Conte, De Zerbi to come to Serie A?
Yes, very much so. I think De Zerbi personally will be waiting for that Milan call, I think. He's a massive Milan fan. He's never hid it. And he apparently rejected Inter with Milan on his mind.
Too bad Redbird are racist towards Italians. I'm sorry, but it's ridiculous. They just don't want an Italian manager. De Zerbi is there. It's like, ah, you don't want to pay the 15 million for me? Don't worry. Let me walk out. Yeah. Let me worry about that. Walks out. No, I think we're going for, not even Conceição, we're going for Fonseca. Because Fonseca's closer.
Bro, they walked into Milanello, looked around and fired Tonali, fired Maldini and sold Tonali immediately, Redbird. Think about that. Yeah, no, of course, this is a conspiracy. But they did say that they don't want an Italian manager. They hinted at it. They said the next manager won't be Italian. So we'll see. I think that De Zerbi represents an opportunity. And if you're not going to go for one of the top dogs in the likes of Tuchel, in the likes of Conte, or even in the likes of Conceição, then the next best thing is to go for someone who potentially has a bright future, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who is driven, someone who knows the league. That's De Zerbi, you know? Yeah. Granted, his football isn't balanced, but Fonseca, man, we've seen Fonseca at Roma.
His football
So
that it's not balanced.
It's not balanced. His football is purely offensive. He concedes a lot of goals, many goals, and you can get away with it. That's a swallow. You can get away with it.
Even Fonseca.
Yes, that's the problem. Even Fonseca. That's the problem. Fonseca, the only thing he has to his name is he has a European trophy.
Mm. Congratulate.
Yes. Pioli has a league. Ah. Is it sideways? It's as sideways as it gets, potentially a downgrade. Because winning the league that season was way harder, I think, than winning the Europa League when Fonseca won it.
Maybe, I don't know.
With Inter, the form they've been in, it took that one mistake by Radu for Milan to win the Bloody League. You don't remember, it was stressful.
But don't undermine the Europa League achievement because it's huge.
No, of course.
I'm pissed off with the Milan fan base as well, because a lot of them were Conceição out because he's too defensive and Milan need an offensive-minded coach.
Mm.
Milan need an offensive-minded coach, yet the defense has been the worst part of Milan this season. So what do you want, guys? Fucking hell. Do you want Milan to have the exact same issues they've had all these years? Or do you want someone who's going to go, respect for your offensive play, dudes. Keep it up. Let's work on the defense a little bit. That is exactly what Conceição would have brought to Milan, but apparently no, it's Fonseca, who's by no means a terrible manager. Even Cesco said he got fifth with Roma when Roma shouldn't have been anywhere up there. He's a decent fucking manager. A good let's European not, experience. Yeah. He's okay.
Yeah, let's not write him off, of course. It's just as a fan of Milan, it's a little bit disappointing, you know, because we've seen what Fonseca can do and we've seen what De Zerbi can do, and obviously watching these De Zerbi teams work is quite scintillating at times, isn't it? So knowing that there's him, knowing there's Conte who could guarantee you a league, knowing there's Conceição who's dominated Portugal for so long, and has knocked out massive teams from the Champions League as well, it just seems like Milan aren't being bold. They're not being smart with their signing. But I'm sure analytically there is some backing to Fonseca from Redbird. Uh-huh. Clearly, there must be.
There must be. But the thing is, what scares me is, do Milan want a puppet? The Redbird want a puppet?
Someone who will stay quiet while they flip the players for a profit.
That, like, I wouldn't say Pioli was a puppet, but he was a company man.
Exactly.
I think that's exactly what they're looking for. They're looking for someone of that caliber. And maybe they don't want Italians, because you rarely find Italian company men. Because De Zerbi, they're Mediterranean. Eh?
Exactly, you tell De Zerbi, you know, we're going to sell Leao and he'll just take off his pants.
It's like, I know how we're going to win the league. How? Bring me Jeremy Boga. what, bro?
Bring me Jeremy Boga.
Boateng.
Exactly. Kevin Prince Boateng.
Shall we jump to the whole Inter thing now?
I mean, not much to add on to this as it stands. Inter have fallen into the hands of Oaktree, who they took their initial loan from. Oaktree will try to settle this debt, which is somewhere in the 400 million mark, within the next 3 weeks, so they can partake in the market.
But as it stands, let's take it back a little bit, because where this came from essentially was, so what are they called, of Zhang?
Suning. Yeah.
So Suning have been in charge with Inter for the past 8 seasons. Together, they've won quite a bit. They have two league titles. They have two Coppa Italia titles. Yes. So following their banter era, Suning have bought quite a bit of success. However, the Chinese company, unfortunately, hasn't exactly balanced the books for Inter. Right? Actually, it was the opposite of that, because they were essentially in debt, which is the crisis that Inter have had for the past few seasons. That season that they sold Hakimi, and they had to get rid of Lukaku as well. And Brozo then Conte left.
No, Brozocoin left for free.
Brozocoin left for free. Brozovic, of course. Brozocoin is just hilarious, though. Conte left because the team was in shambles, apparently. So they took this loan. They went up to Oaktree, a multi-billion dollar, I believe, hedge fund,
yeah.
And they told them, we need your help. We need 200-something million to help us balance the books. And Oaktree were like, okay, we'll do that. Give us a seat on your board. Give us a seat on your board and we'll be able to give you that. And if you don't manage to pay it back in time, like you have 2 years
we'll
to pay
the club.
We'll seize the club. It is what they call, I believe, a hostile takeover. And essentially, it has recently broke out the news that, oh, by the way, you remember that deal? Zhang hasn't paid it yet, and he has the next 2 weeks to pay it, or else it's gonna go directly to Oaktree.
No, it's fallen in their hands.
Yes. Ah, this okay. two weeks ago.
Okay. I thought you were talking about now.
No. Zhang was looking at other companies to be able to loan him $395 million so that he can pay that off. Right? And then he'll need to pay more interest on the $395 million, no, when it becomes $550 million. So this guy, unfortunately, business mind, disaster.
Probably has something to do with the fact that he's like 23 years old.
That's crazy.
How old is Steven Zhang? I'll Google that.
He looks ridiculously young. So now that's happened. On the stroke of midnight between Tuesdays, 32. On the stroke of midnight between Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, Oaktree have totally seized ownership of the club. So what they want to do, like Jake mentioned, is balance the books and bring Inter financial stability again. They want absolutely no part to do with the sporting side of things. Why? They essentially didn't want to run a football club. They think it's not a lucrative business for them. Multi-billion dollar company will look after every single cent, where it goes, what they do, whatever. So they have 100% faith in Marotta. Bro, baby.
Fair enough.
Do your thing, like, yeah. Over to Marotta. And I think this can be good for Inter.
It's gonna be better for Inter, because we've seen Inter so far. Granted, they've had this spell of domination, but they've always had to sell someone every season. Look back, you know, look at the past three seasons. Milan haven't sold as many stars as Inter have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just obviously because they had to. The Oaktree, as you said, rich as shit. They're going to pump a bunch of money into the club, and it's going to be a good thing at the end of the day for Inter and their fans. Yeah, so so
but
good times ahead for Inter.
They can't just pump
they
money
need
into
to
the
settle,
club.
They're probably going to
do little business this summer in order to balance the books. Because while balancing the books, they need to look after their own pocket.
Yeah.
So they're just going to funnel money into that. And this could potentially lead to frustration of key players at Inter, because it is yet another summer and yet another season where they have to be super, super careful. This is what drove Conte out. And keep in mind, they are no longer dealing with an Inzaghi who is in awe of having the Inter job. But now Inter are in awe of having Inzaghi as their manager because he's done such a great job with them. So suddenly, Inzaghi has the leverage. Because he has pull now, and one of the best managers in the world, and he's recognized Champions League final.
Yes.
You know?
It's true. That's absolutely true. However, again, as you mentioned, bro, they don't even need a large transfer budget to operate. Let's say they sell Denzel Dumfries from the things that are being rumored right now. They'll bring in Albert Goodmanson for a splash of 15 million. They might even sell Dumfries for something similar to that. So they'll essentially get him for a straight swap. Albert Goodmanson is already a fantastic player to bring in. It's an upgrade on the team. I think you lose Dumfries, you bring in Goodmanson. It's a massive upgrade. Mm-hmm. You're improving your system. Imagine, you know, you can pop this guy instead of Mkhitaryan. Literally. Or you can pop him instead of like Thuram alongside Lautaro or just as a third option up front over there. I trust Marotta will do good business regardless of what budget.
Yes, as always, absolutely has been the case. And Inter have probably the most pull in Italy at the moment. Shall we jump to either we can do Serie B now? I mean, I don't think there's much to talk about Roma and Fiorentina. Well, Fiorentina have the upcoming Conference League final, and obviously if they win that, they lock down Europa League football for next season. If they do that whilst finishing ninth, then obviously we'll see either Napoli or Torino play Conference League football next year. But I don't think we need to expand too much on that. Let's get into the relegation battle, brother. So Sassuolo are officially relegated, whilst Hellas and Cagliari, obviously, they have survived now. Relegation is now between Udinese and Frosinone, who face off in the next match day. And Empoli play Roma. What do you expect to see in these scenarios?
I think I was of the opinion originally that Frosinone would get relegated, right? Udinese are home.
Let me double check that. I have them open.
Nice.
So, no, Frosinone are home.
Frosinone are home, Udinese are away.
Yes, this both these matches, by the way, Empoli-Roma and Frosinone-Udinese, will both be played at 8:45 Sunday night.
I think Udinese beat Frosinone and Empoli draw to Roma and it'll go to a playout.
Between
no, it can't if that's the case, because Frosinone are on 35. It can only go to a playout if Empoli draw and Udinese lose to Frosinone. So I think right now if I had to bet money, bro. Man, it's such a tough one. You know what? I'm sticking with Frosinone.
I'm sticking with Empoli.
Do one over Roma, the miracle. Roma have their season done right now. Finally, they get to stretch their legs. Dybala's in and out of hospital.
You think they'll get 3 points?
Who knows, bro? I think with Nicola, you can never say never. Like
because
Justin
they
Bieber.
Need 3 points.
They need 3 points. They need 3 points. They need to beat Roma.
You think they do it?
I think they do it.
A fiver.
A tenner. 500 euros.
What the hell are you doing?
5 euro that Empoli don't get relegated. Let's do that. Not that Empoli beat. They have to beat Roma. So I'm okay.
Pleasure doing business.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
5 euro that Empoli beat Roma. I just bet right now. Yeah. So if you're watching, guys, that's how you do it, all right?
Why do you bet 5 euro with me and not just put 5 euro on bet365 and then...
And win more.
Quintuple your money.
Because like that, I have the possibility of losing out to a betting company. When like this, I'm losing out to a person who I love and respect. There we go, guys.
It's a weird answer by Jim.
Thanks, man. Locatelli, Fratesi, Scamacca, Raspadori, Traore, Sensi, Boga, Politano, Demiral, Acerbi, Duncan, Pellegrini, Sanabria, Caputo, and Odgaard are a few of the names we've seen playing for Sassuolo recently, since we're talking about them earlier on getting relegated. That, to think that they've had these players within the last 5 years, is absolutely insane, dude. The fact that they sold many of these guys for a decent amount and just failed to reinvest year after year after year. Dude. Again, let me repeat that. It's Locatelli, Frattesi, Scamacca, Raspadori, Traore, Sensi, Boga, Politano, Demiral, Acerbi, Duncan, Pellegrini, Sanabria, Caputo and Odgaard. Odgaard, of course, doing well at Bologna.
The central midfielder that went to Fiorentina, what was his name again?
Duncan?
No. Small guy,
Maxime
number
Lopez.
Six.
Maxime there we
Lopez.
Go. Another one. So, and I'm sure I'm forgetting more.
They've been 10 years in Serie A now, and lest we forget, obviously I wave bye-bye to Sassuolo, and I'm all like hating on Sassuolo, so on and so forth. That's more just frustration out of what the owners have done to this club, and the way that they've handled these departures, and the players they've brought in, and the defense, how they've never invested in it. But 10 years of entertainment, that's as well.
Yeah. I mean, what they lack in atmosphere, they always made up for on the pitch.
Lest we forget Di Francesco bringing them up and getting them Europa League.
It was incredible. Even the fact that they had Kevin Prince Boateng playing for them under De Zerbi, that was crazy, you know? I mean, so much fun to watch. And then he went to Barcelona. He played so well, Kevin Prince Boateng, man. His loan ended, and then Fiorentina poached him.
De Zerbi, Sassuolo, I'll never forget, man. Yeah. Where's Mimmo gonna go?
Berardi, eh? I mean, that's another good question. Where does Berardi go? Where should he go? Napoli is a decent shout.
Napoli is a good shout. I think there are a lot of top 7 Serie A teams that would be a good shout for him. I remember Lazio were linked to him for a while, and he fits in now that Felipe Anderson is leaving.
Bologna.
Orsolini,
yes. But you need, if you're playing on three fronts, you need players. You have Orsolini, you have Berardi. You know, you have Salamakers, you have Ndoye.
I think Lazio's a better shout.
Lazio, yes, is a better shout.
Because
you get Zaccagni on one side, and then Berardi on the other.
Which is fucking fire. And Tati Castellanos, his qualities
would complement them.
Would complement both of them.
Absolutely, as a support striker.
We're just cooking,
yes. Also, bro, honestly, why not Juve? Chiesa, Vlahovic, Berardi.
Oh.
Yeah, man.
He can go. Why not? But
Milan as well could potentially be, but he's Italian.
It worked out horribly for him, because he's like, let me stay another year at Sassuolo. But he didn't say that.
Yeah. He tried to leave. Nothing materialized for him.
He got fucking injured, and now there's no way he could play 6 months and say, yeah, show people that he's still good after the injury, and the top team will sign him. The only way he can do that is if he shows people he's still good in Serie B.
No.
Or if he signs, yes.
But he'll get, bro, people know what Berardi can do.
They have no guarantee that he's the same player after the injury.
Oh no, but he's not old enough for that to be detrimental. He's nearing 30 and he tore his Achilles tendon.
But
this is the good thing going for him right now is that Sassuolo have been relegated, which means people can pick him up for peanuts.
That's true.
So yeah, he will definitely get
top team.
Maybe. I wouldn't put it past the likes of Juventus to snag Berardi, man.
It's true, because if they get him for peanuts, then they can integrate him at their own pace without the pressure of having paid a hefty fee for him.
That's it. And let's not get it twisted. The second this guy gets fit, he's going to be one of the best players on the team.
We don't know after his injury. We never know after any injury in the world.
Jake Fennec, I know.
Berardi, I'm confident, but I don't know.
I know.
Was Zaniolo the same?
Zaniolo was different, bro. Zaniolo never did it for Zaniolo, 10 years. Zaniolo had one good season.
Zaniolo went out and tore his other one.
Yes, that's true. That's a very good point. I mean, another injury on top of it would obviously prove my point completely wrong, obviously.
I mean,
but if he were to stay healthy, bro, I do think that he will be the best, one of the best wherever he goes.
I really hope he manages to stay healthy, because this guy Berardi is one of the most overlooked. Yeah. And why? Why is he overlooked?
Because of the Italian.
Because of him being benched for Chiesa for the Italian national
team. And the miss in the qualifiers.
But honestly, one of the most talented players in that Italy squad.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, he's so good. He could turn a game around by himself, man.
Yeah, and he's got that raw desire that not many people have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, he's a sore loser, you know, he's bitter. When things aren't going well, he carries the team on his shoulders, and that's an important quality to have. I mean, he's been carrying Sassuolo this season. He was injured, he was out injured. They left it to Lauriante, who's a very good player, and he couldn't do it. So, like, you know, goes to show what Berardi has been doing this entire time. Another interesting shout, if Torino get Europe and Juric stays, you know, that could be another destination for him.
Okay, so we know who's getting relegated.
Yes. No.
Who's getting promoted?
Who's getting promoted?
Mela. Okay, so we know Parma and Como promoted.
Yes.
But there are currently guys, and tune in if you're not tuning in. Tune in. The Serie B playoffs. So the quarterfinals have taken place. The quarterfinals are the only matches of the Serie B playoffs that are played over one leg.
Yes.
Over here, Palermo beat Sampdoria 2-0, two goals by the formidable Diakite. Shout out Diakite.
Diakite, the wing back. He's got 33 starts this season, 4 goals, 3 assists, 4 team of the week appearances. He's only 23 years old and he's having a hell of a season.
Diakite, baby. Second game, Cantanzaro 4, Brescia 2 after extra time. Listen to this. So Brescia opened the scoring in the 8th minute through Galazzi. Yemello equalized for Cantanzaro, making it 1-1 in the 26th. Brescia went up 2-1 in the 52nd through Mancini. Donnarumma for Cantanzaro equalized in the 90th minute. And then Brignola in the 105th and Yemello again in the 120th.
Absolutely crazy game.
Crazy stuff. So Cantanzaro and then went to face Cremonese. Cremonese obviously automatically in the semis, whilst also Venezia are also automatically in the semis, who are now facing Palermo. First legs have taken place. Venezia beat Palermo in Sicily 1-0 thanks to a Pierini goal, and Cremonese versus Cantanzaro ended 2-2 in very, very dramatic fashion.
Yeah, it's been very good. I must admit that Palermo didn't look very good against Venezia in their semi-final game. And Venezia have a 1-0 lead and advantage when it comes to the standings as well. So in the next leg, if Palermo only win 1-0, then Venezia go through.
Yeah, come on Venezia.
Venezia are looking pretty good. They've got an absolute menace of a striker up front in Poyampalo, who's
Superman.
So good, yeah. Venezia just look like the favorites, I think, in my opinion, if you have to ask me. Cantanzaro on the other hand play very good football, but they don't look as ready as Venezia do.
I think Venezia look like they've been favorites.
Cremonese have that financial backing and they've got a team who literally played in Serie A. They've got a lot of experience.
They're still there, the guys. Piquel
on
the team. No, I think they might be favourites, man. I liked them the most in these games. I think Venezia were lucky that they came up against Palermo. I'm hoping I'm wrong because, like, sure, Cremonese back in Serie A. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are happy about that, but doesn't excite me as much as seeing Venezia back in. This is what good kits does, bro. Yeah.
Look at this, dude. All these guys played in Serie A.
Sciofani, Tsaju,
Antov, Bianchetti, Castagnetti, like, Vasquez, Zanimacchia, Qualiata, Piquel.
Tsaju back guys in Serie A would be lit, oh,
of course. And I can't believe Sciofani's still at it, man. He must be 40. He must be 40 years
He's
old.
He's not 40.
He's 38. Oof. Okay. Yeah, I mean, he could start for Milan.
Over Jovic.
Yeah.
Milan are keeping Jovic.
Milan are keeping Jovic. Yeah, that's
something.
Interesting, considering he's never given Milan a good start.
Hey.
Yeah, we'll keep him.
I think last thing before we end the episode is having a bit of a look at Ranieri's career. After yet another. This is what I love. Okay, I was having a debate with Jamie yesterday on the group chat. Jamie is a Prem head idiot, is what we call them, where he said Prem has the better managers. And I said, wow, tell me you fucking watch the Prem without telling me you watch the Prem, because they look at Klopp and Guardiola and Eddie Howe, even though Eddie Howe has Saudi money, and that is why Newcastle are doing well. And he said the Prem has and has always had better managers than Serie A. And the thing is, okay, Conte, who was one of the last managers to win it, to win the Prem before Guardiola, came out of Italy. Ancelotti, who won it for Chelsea, came out of Italy. Ranieri, who won it for Leicester, came out
no,
of Italy.
No, of course. The fact of the matter is and stands that an English manager has never won the Premier League. And that in itself is a crazy stat. So if in the Premier League, you're saying, ah, there are the best managers, they're foreign.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe, yeah. maybe, sure, okay. Mm-hmm. But first of all, I don't think so, because look at the teams that have won the Champions League in recent history. You know, they're mostly foreign. The managers who have won the Champions League are all foreign, who have foreign experience out of the Premier League as well. So I do think that that's a little bit of a of a bold claim, to say the least.
What I was going to say, though, is despite winning it with Leicester, which is the greatest sporting story in history, in my opinion, the 2016 Leicester winning the fucking Premier League, insane shit.
Is it better than Michael Mifsud scoring 2 goals against Manchester United? The Maltese Mosquito.
Just a bit better. For me, I obviously prefer the Mifsud thing, but just a bit better, bro. Remember, we were asleep and our dad was watching the next day. He's losing his mind.
I'm jumping.
Yes, bro.
It was unheard of. A Maltese player. Guys, if you haven't heard of this, FA Cup, Michael Mifsud, a Maltese man playing for Coventry City. One of the
5'4", tiny guy. They just called the Mosquito.
Yeah, the Mosquito, playing with Coventry City in the Championship. They come against Manchester United. He was up against
Piquet
and another decorated
Johnny Evans.
Johnny Evans or O'Shea, something like that, I think.
O'Shea. You're right.
And he put them on their ass. He scored twice and hit the post with a back heel.
With a taconazzo, bro. It was
crazy. For us, you can't even imagine like what that was like for us Maltese people. Like we don't get much joy in the world of football.
Too bad I've had 2 interactions with him and he was an absolute twat in both of them. So, I don't give
love,
a fuck.
We'd love to have you on.
We'd love to have you on, Michael.
Ego.
Whatever, man.
Ranieri.
I was gonna say, for Ranieri, he had that with Leicester, greatest sporting moment in history. However, what meant to him the most always, Cagliari.
Yes.
No matter what, that is the team that is in his heart, got them promotion, kept them up. Cagliari for Ranieri. Just Cagliari legend, man.
Ranieri was also a player. Seems to be a theme, here. Gasperini, Allegri, Ranieri, all players. The cream team. He started his senior career, his playing career at Roma in 1973. He played for Catanzaro. He played 226 games for Catanzaro, scoring 8 times. He moved to Catania in 1982, where he played 92 games. And then played 40 games for Palermo in 1984. That's 366 professional appearances as a defender with 9 goals. His managerial career.
You said as a defender?
As a defender, he was a defender.
I hope he was a wing back. Bro is small.
Hey, but back then it was different, bro. Back then
Baresi was Franco Baresi, one of the greatest. Yeah. Like.
Managerial career. It started in 1986 with Vigor Lamezia. Before he moved to Puteolana in 1987, and then he just went to Cagliari, Napoli, Fiorentina, Valencia, Atletico Madrid, Chelsea, Valencia again, Parma, Juventus, Roma, Inter, Monaco, Greece, Leicester City, Nantes, Fulham, Roma, Sampdoria, Watford, and most recently Cagliari again. Now let's look at what he's actually won. He's won Serie C with Cagliari in 1988. Yes. Look at that, full circle. He's won the Coppa Italia Serie C with Napoli, Cagliari the same season. And he earned them Serie B promotion twice on 2 separate occasions in 1989-1990.
Wow, so in 2 seasons... Yes, in 2 seasons he got them from C up to A.
Yeah, literally. With Fiorentina, he won Serie B in 1993. hilarious that Fiorentina won Serie B in 1993. He won the Coppa Italia with Fiorentina again in 1995. So look at that. Promotion 1993, Coppa Italia victory 1995.
Crazy, Ranieri, man.
And then a Supercoppa in 1996. He went to Valencia, he won the Coppa del Rey and the Intertoto Cup. Remember the Intertoto
yes,
Cup?
Yes, bro.
The thing that...
Roma had won and they got a bonsai. Yes. Like a tree
no,
or a plant.
I don't know if that was Roma. It was... But Bologna, the last time they played in Europe, was the Intertoto Cup.
Oh, okay.
Remember that?
Okay. Oh, yeah. No. So I've got it completely twisted.
Yeah. Ranieri won that with Valencia in 1998. He also won the Super Cup with them in 2004. He won League 2 with Monaco. He won the Premier League with Leicester City. He won the Premier League with Leicester City in 2015, and his individual accolades, I'm not going to read them to you.
Oh, they're all in 2016, they're his all, individual yeah. accolades. Look at that. They're all, apart from Fiorentina Hall of Fame in 2022.
Yeah.
The rest are all 2016.
And they're all Manager of the Year. Manager of the Year. Just different
story
magazines.
Of the year. Manager of the Year. Sexiest Man Alive, 2016.
Dilly Ding, Dilly Dong, Man of the Year.
Oh, I'm glad he's retiring because he is old now. Yeah. He's fucking old. And I think he gets to look back at his career and enjoy it as a legend now. He's going to be in multiple Hall of Fames. Make the Hall of Fame of the Premier League. Make the Hall of Fame of Leicester, of Serie A, of Cagliari. He deserves to rest now. Chill out, like, because you're quite old, dog.
Yes, it's time to rest
out.
In peace.
Bro, what the fuck?
You said it's time to rest. Rest in peace.
No.
What? You don't want him to rest in stress?
No, bro. Just chill out. that's all he needs to do. He doesn't need to rest in rune, babe. I think that's it, bro.
That's it,
for
guys.
This episode. We had a lot of talking points.
Let us know what you think about the format, guys, because we did change it up for the end of the season, of course. We thought that this would be the most engaging. If we ran you through every single match in match day 37, I think, first of all, they happened so long ago, like most of you don't remember. So many games are hard to judge because most teams don't have anything to play for, so they're like rotating players.
A lot of games were insignificant.
Yeah.
It's like Juve Bologna, we could have discussed that for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, but why?
But there's no reason to, exactly.
Why? It's a fucking friendly.
Exactly. They feel like glorified friendlies.
Mm-hmm. But of course, next episode is going to be the end of Serie A, but not fucking quite, bro.
Not quite, because there's
Fiorentina, Atalanta.
And Fiorentina and Atalanta, both motherfucking teams, made it as far as they could possibly go.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't find a slot
literally,
in the week, because their weeks were jam-packed.
Literally.
Both teams.
And how funny.
So that's going
to
be a super cup.
They both need to finish in certain positions.
To affect everyone else.
Exactly. If only there's a way, like if Fiorentina win, for example, that will happen.
Yeah.
Or if they draw, that will happen. That would be amazing for them to just biscotto the fuck out of it.
Yeah,
fix it up so that 10 teams get Serie A.
That would be great.
Would be amazing. But anyway.
Next episode, we'll bring you our team of the season as well, by the way. In a 3-5-2 formation. Let us know what you think. It has to be the winning team.
3-5-2.
It has to be Inter. I have mine ready, Loki.
You have yours ready, Loki. I'm stuck already. I did the keeper, and then I was doing the three centre-backs.
The three centre-backs are the toughest part.
I got stuck as fuck.
And then there's one in the striker position that's tough. One's obvious, and the other one's a 50-50, in my opinion.
Oh, you're
I'm not gonna give you any more, though.
That's it. Yeah. Don't give me any more. We're off, guys. We'll see you next time. Thank you once again for tuning in, and we love you all.
All of you.
No matter what shape, what size, what race, what sex, what... We love you guys. Take
everyone.
Care.
This is Serie A Spotlight.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion,
towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.